we say this all the time. You know, we don't advocate for customer research because we think that the customer word is the only thing that matters. It's one, but it is a critical input along with the direction that the company is going, the appetite of the leadership team, the product roadmap, things like that. So without involving other team members, you risk missing out on team context and goals that may be unbeknownst to this solo practitioner trying to do this on their own. Welcome to the Forget the Funnel podcast, where our goal is to help you as a SaaS leader finally stop guessing, understand your best customers, and drive more predictable recurring revenue.
We're Gia and Claire, founders of Forget the Funnel, a product marketing and growth consultancy that helps SaaS businesses learn from their best customers, map and measure their experiences, and unlock their best levers for growth. If you're looking to help your team make smarter decisions, this show is for you. So we're talking about team stuff today, not like Microsoft Teams. No, what we're talking about is the after of having, you know, done the work of gathering customer data or running customer research and, you know, mining that for insight. After that comes, okay, what do we do with this information? How does this impact our teams day to day and the decisions we make and the things that we work on? So when I say team stuff, that's really what I mean. Paint a picture of what good looks like.
Okay, so the positive note is implementing customer-led growth and basically leveraging a framework like this, which ultimately means exactly what you just said, like, you know, learning from ideal customers, finding out more about who your ideal customers are, and then operationalizing that understanding for the team. Ultimately, the process that we are, you know, talking about when we talk about customer-led growth is effectively that process. And when we were talking earlier about this, I was thinking about a talk that I gave, I think in 2017, and it was all about how like customer centricity is bullshit. Companies who call themselves customer-centric are completely full of shit. What they usually mean is like their customer success team is great. And like they equate that with being customer centric. But what we really believe customer centricity means and being customer led means is that you've sort of operationalized and mobilized your team around this ideal customer and this ideal customer experience. So once you've done that, there's three huge benefits to being customer led in that way. The first benefit is, like we're talking about today, and most of our emphasis of this conversation now is really around the team, the benefits to mobilizing the team around a centralized and even deep understanding of who your best customers are and what they care about. And taking insight that, you know, is gathered by whatever means, we're not getting into the details of how we gather that insight, you know, in this conversation, but really around what you do with it and what it allows your teams to do. It helps them feel more empowered to make more decisions. It's funny, I only read one baby book when I was pregnant, and it was this book called Bring Up Baby. And there's this concept in it, which is like, your child can make any decision it wants to inside this like frame. And that's kind of like, it's freeing a little bit because constraints are very helpful, but inside of those constraints, your team can do anything. And so when you empower them with all this context about your customers and all this context around, you know, what, you know, matters to them and anxieties and deal breakers and motivations and desired outcomes and all of that amazing nuance at each of these milestones in their customer experience, it's actually very freeing for teams because they can make all kinds of changes to that customer experience within that context. So there's a lot of mobilizing and like being able to be actionable that the team gets to benefit from. Also, they feel more connected to what they're doing. So it's not support tickets closed or credit cards entered or like revenue targets. It's really around like helping customers solve a real problem and be like genuinely helpful. And it just feels good to be part of a team that thinks and feels and acts in that way. And so that's really a huge benefit to this as well, is that you as a team feel more invested in what you're doing because you're actually genuinely helping other human beings at the end of the day.
I want to dig into that one a little bit because there's the feeling connected to the customer, which you just emphasized. And I agree, that's really, really meaningful. But there's also the mobilizing your team around a shared understanding of your customers and like the jobs that you know, your customers hire your product to do also creates this shared language for the team to feel more connected to each other. So common for different departments to use different function-specific jargon. There's a team I'm working with right now. One of the things that's been really amazing about working with them is once we uncovered the four different jobs to be done that bring their customers through the front door, the team was able to look at their customer base and be like, oh, okay, so, you know, this account is a job one. This account is a job, you know, this and this and this. And also now whenever they're, you know, whenever a new lead, a new potential customer comes through the front door, the team can look at it and be like, okay, based on all these criteria, it looks like this is going to be this job and they need this experience. Unlike they're an MQL or an SQL or, you, again, going back to function specific jargon, like that's been really cool to see.
Yeah, that's a really important point, but also like the handoff from team two, which is very related. But the understanding, like once you've operationalized the customer experience in this way and you have these milestones and even these KPIs for basically measuring our customers getting to a particular milestone, that also facilitates the handoff points between different teams so that everybody understands like when a customer becomes sort of our responsibility and what part of the customer experience are we responsible for versus you. And there's so not only language stuff, which we, you know, we love our acronyms and our, you know, new terminology. And oh, wow, I'm working with a team right now that's overdone it with the word bundle or bucket or segment. And so now they've moved on to clustering, like just the language, because you run out of words because everybody's got these like associations. And so, yes, the shared language, wildly important, but the handoff points also become a lot more obvious. But there are two other very critical benefits that we would be remiss not to mention when we do this well. What we're also able to do, obviously, is create a better, more resonant customer experience. So we know our customers on a deeper level. We understand, you know, a lot more about what they're trying to accomplish. We have a much deeper understanding of the context that they're in when they're making various decisions throughout their customer journey. So we're able to do things like produce more resonant anything, like any experience, right? With whether we're talking about the website or emails or product experience or sales calls or meetings or whatever is needed, we're able to sort of do a much better job of resonating and meeting customers where they are when they're in a given milestone, which ultimately leads to higher like conversion rates and higher retention and things like that, because we're meeting customers where they are. It's such a simple way to sort of to sum it up, but that means a lot, right? There's a lot of unpacking when you say like meeting customers where they are. That means like so many, there's a lot to drill into there. But I think the TLDR of doing that well, or the TLDL of what that means, is like the conversion rates increase, right? So those KPIs that we've talked about before, those leading indicators of success, if we do a better job of helping customers get from one to the next, those are those leading indicators of success that then influence those lagging indicators of success, which are the point number three, when this is done well, business goals. So do a much better job of influencing those lagging indicators of success when your team is mobilized around those leading indicators of success, which ultimately leads to a better customer experience as well, which is this whole like self-fulfilling, amazing prophecy, these things all working together.
I want to go back to what you mentioned about creating a more resonant customer experience and that in turn impacting conversion rates, which then in turn impact revenue, right? Business goals at the highest level. Some of the most common touch points of a customer experience where teams we work with often realize they have opportunity to improve is either, you know, if it's a higher touch experience, the first time a potential customer gets on the phone with someone, or if it's lower touch, the first time they get into the product, right? So conversion rate from sales to close, conversion rate from free to paid, either one. Once a team understands the real reason people come to their product, the team can start to assess when someone comes through the front door, what are the potential reasons that person has arrived, and then make their experience so much more relevant to that particular customer. This is something that we've implemented probably every time we've been allowed to touch the sign up form with a team we work with, adding one field to your sign up form that says, hey, you know, which of these best describes you right now? And enables your potential customer to select one of a couple of reasons they could have shown up, which you learned from your customer research, then means when that information comes through to your team, they can trigger emails that are more appropriate and valuable, or they can give a demo that is specifically tailored to the use case that brought someone there, and they can get so much more, again, so much more relevant and so much less generic, and they can stop providing this kind of one-size-fits-all experience. So that is one of the most obvious places that almost any company we've worked with has an opportunity to improve their CX.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about a workshop that we ran with a company where afterwards the founder reached out to me and said, you did more in 2 weeks than my product manager was able to do. And I can't remember the number. I think it was like a year and a half or something. But the product manager was probably the most excited about the outcome of the work because so much of it impacted his life and his work. He was jazzed. He was super, super happy about it. So everybody was very happy that all the wheels that needed to be greased were greased, and everybody felt like they had what they needed to make a big impact. So I think we've painted a pretty decent picture of what good looks like and what can be when this is done well. But it is valuable to think through from a team perspective what some of the ways that we typically see that teams kind of like mess it up. It's very easy to fall into these traps. And even some of these traps were kind of unavoidable in their defense. But the first one that I think we both immediately were like, yes, definitely, this is a problem, was this idea of being the lone wolf and trying to drive this project forward solo, either as a practitioner or as a stakeholder, and just sort of like not involving the people that need to be involved. This is particularly problematic when you're a practitioner on a team and you don't involve either your manager or like the main stakeholders of the company, like the leadership team. And we've seen that in a couple of cases. Do you want to talk about like the perils or like what that might look like and how to sort of watch out for it and solve for that?
I can think of the struggles that, you know, various heads of have found themselves in when we've worked with teams and, you know, it's the head of product or the head of marketing, or it's this one person who is very bought into the idea of being more customer centric in how they make decisions, but they've tried to push forward without getting their counterparts also on board.
Something that we have seen a lot over the years, especially in our ecosystem of in-house practitioners that we've helped and sort of supported from the sidelines versus companies that we've worked with, is that they try to, when DIYing this process, they try to make as much progress as they can on their own. And they feel like, I can't involve my stakeholders because I'm never going to get buy-in on this thing. And so I need to do this on my own because there's no way that I'm going to be able to involve stakeholders. They're way too concerned with other things. And I know this could solve a lot of our business, you know, challenges that we have right now, but I don't have the, you know, social capital internally to convince these stakeholders. And so they try to lone wolf it. We worked with a company not too long ago where we worked with the CMO and the CMO only. And we didn't speak to anybody but this CMO. And one of the biggest challenges was that she was trying to solve for was like she needed to identify their differentiated value in a very competitive market.
Saturated market, right?
Very. And it was very hard because had we had access to the product team or like the leadership team or the product team or some of the adjacent teams or some vision for like where the product was headed, I feel like we would have been in a way better position and she would have been in a way better position to inform the strategy, inform the insights on like where to go, because customer research is one of the inputs. We say this all the time. You know, we don't advocate for customer research because we think that the customer word is the only thing that matters. It's one, but it is a critical input along with the direction that the company is going, the appetite of the leadership team, the product roadmap, things like that. So without involving other team members, you risk missing out on team context and, you know, goals that may be unbeknownst to this solo practitioner trying to do this on their own. I've also worked with a company where we did work with everybody that should have been involved, but the tippity top of the food chain. And that tippity-top person of the food chain was involved at the very last minute and came in and was like, what is going on here? Like, just wasn't involved early enough to understand what goals we were trying to accomplish, the nuance of the research, the decisions that had been made along the way. Like, they were brought in too late, and it's not their fault. I felt terribly. I didn't know about this person until the very last minute, when who I thought was my primary stakeholder in this engagement actually turned out not to be. There was somebody else that actually needed to do the final sign-off, and I only found out about the last minute, and it was brutal.
Yes.
So that
has been in that situation. It's super sucks.
super sucks. Don't do that. Involve the stakeholders. And we, like, if you are an in-house practitioner trying to DIY this, come to our office hours. We do one once a month. And a lot of times what we are talking about are ways to involve your stakeholders that is, can be really helpful. And sometimes that means bringing in an outside party. And I know that that sounds bias coming from us, but it does legitimately help. It can be the difference maker here when somebody else outside of the organization echoes back what you've been saying all along. That can do a ton to help gain more buy-in. And then, of course, there's, you know, the other very obvious things, which is talk to your other team leads and get them involved.
Yeah. Really, really hits home hearing you describe having that that relationship with who you believe is the key stakeholder, and then learning at the very end that there's someone else above that person who has not been briefed on the project, hasn't been bought in on the whole thing. That one's super painful. And there's an adjacent team dynamic that can really jeopardize the success of implementing customer insight. This is one of those ones that I'm not really sure how a team gets around necessarily, but stakeholders cycling in and out of implementing what you learn will create so many roadblocks to progress. So as a team we worked with them a while ago, and then we did some really, really wonderful positioning work together early on in their journey. And then they engaged us for a second project. It was time for an evolution of positioning in their market. Different set of VPs, generally speaking. It was clear that during that time, like while we were working with them on the state of their position in the market, there was also just a lot of internal restructuring.
I remember their product marketing changed hands twice.
Yeah.
Right.
Which critical stakeholder to getting positioning nailed down and implemented. I'm like honestly not sure how to, you know, recommend solving for.
I mean, that I think that comes down to leadership, because it's unavoidable. It's especially unavoidable right now when there's just a lot of turnover happening, voluntary or involuntary turnover that's been happening in the past few months, but also the past couple of years. And I would say the only antidote that I can think of in that situation is that the primary stakeholder is the right primary stakeholder and can carry that project along and continue to champion it even as people cycle in and out. Like, the stakeholder has to take responsibility for championing that work forward if they inherently believe in the value that is going to provide.
The picture you painted at the beginning of this conversation about customer insight being implemented team-wide is really amazing. And so there's a natural inclination to get everybody involved once you've learned some critical things about your customer base. But I think the devil is in the details here when it comes to how many people to involve in phases.
You were just in a situation like this where like a bajillion people were invited to one call, and it was only supposed to be like a review call, and they turned it into an internal like readout at the company. And so a readout is a free for all. A readout means anybody by definition. And so it just morphed the purpose of what was, you know, what we were trying to accomplish at that stage in the work with them. And then you were forced into this very awkward situation where you had to have a conversation with the primary stakeholder about who to uninvite from a meeting, and like how ugly of a situation to end up in.
Super not fun. And again, well-intentioned, everybody should be able to leverage the insights and so on. But yes, the evolution of what was meant to be kind of a review and cool next steps type of meeting becoming a readout meant okay, these five people have no context on this project, so we need to spend 20 minutes starting at the business goals and then what we did and what we found, and that's a huge waste of these five people's time.
What I was going to ask is, like, why is that a problem? Can you talk about why it's a problem to have so many people? You mentioned one where context is missing for some. I don't know if you've got another example. One came to mind for me, which is that conflicting priorities, right? So the different people in the room that have different goals for the work.
I think it's that combined with the slowing of progress on the original goal. So the original set of people involved in the project, very well scoped, business problem to solve being well scoped. Point of the meeting was, we have the information we need. Now let's talk about the areas of your customer experience that require improvement. Mm-hmm. And now that implementation piece probably isn't going to happen for another 1-2 weeks because of scheduling reasons.
And new goals have the risk of being injected in, right? So if other stakeholders show up, very important stakeholders, we're not saying that small questions are trying to be asked of the work. We're saying that, like, important questions that are legitimately, you know, business critical, get being introduced too late in the game can be really hard to try to solve for. I'm actually in a situation right now with the team where just out of the gate, the priority is hard to decide because of the stakeholders
like
that are
morphing.
Involved. Well, no, not that it's morphing. It's that, like, they're literally coming to this work, this body of work, with too many questions and not conflicting necessarily, but just too broad
from one body of research or one research project or however
that's
one
right
phrase it.
Yeah. That's right. I commend this team for wanting to answer these questions, but when there's this many people involved, it has the potential to blow out the scope of what we're trying to learn, which then makes it less useful to everybody. So that's a situation of, like, too many cooks at the beginning of the project, too many cooks being added at the end of the project. I know that I've definitely experienced workshops where, like, new people get added and we're meant to be, like, in the final decisions of, like, how are we going to action this and what's the implementation, the prioritization plan, and new people are added in at that point, and then they start questioning things that we made decisions on weeks prior. The answer for how to avoid too many cooks is to really come up with who that core team needs to be at the onset of the project and make sure that your scoping is really dialed in, and that we talk about a project brief being, like, a very clearly articulated project brief around what is it that you're trying to accomplish here? What are the business critical challenges that you're trying to solve? Get alignment on that with the stakeholders that need to be involved in that. And then come up with what we call in the book is, like, your CLG team, which is kind of like the task force that is going to stay attached to this project from beginning to the end of this project, like the setting those goals and then defining who's going to be involved from beginning to end. And then if somebody cycles out, like we mentioned, because of team members changing, then that stakeholder, that primary, we talk about a primary stakeholder and we talk about a champion. Of course, there needs to be somebody, a champion, that's pushing the work forward, but that primary stakeholder also needs to be that champion and serve that champion role if anybody on that CLG team needs to sort of, you know, cycle out or cycle in. There needs to be somebody who's making sure that we're staying on track and it is not hitting roadblocks and staying the course and keeping their mind's eye on that original challenge and, you know, opportunity that you set out with from the get-go. So we cover in the book. Chapter 2 is all about how to build a CLG team. There's lots of resources in the workbook about who those people should be, how to identify them. There's even an email template for, like, how to reach out to them and get buy-in and stuff. So we've done a lot of that work. And so if anybody's interested in digging into that, obviously check out the book.
We just fixed all of the team problems ever.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Talk about tip of the iceberg. But if you can avoid these major roadblocks and sort of foresee and make a plan for them ahead of time and just be aware of them ahead of time, it will go so much more smoothly.
So far.
And then so far, like, involving the right people means this gets democratized to all of those people's teams and makes it across the organization a much more effective way, so that all those things that we were talking about at the top of the episode, where, like, people feel motivated and mobilized and empowered to, you know, do their best work and create amazing customer experiences that ultimately benefit the business. Like, a lot easier. So I guess we'll call it and have a good one, everyone.
And that's it for this episode of the Forget the Funnel podcast. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions about the topics we covered, don't hesitate to contact Gia or myself on LinkedIn. And you can also visit our website at forgetthefunnel.com. This is still a new podcast for us, so ratings, reviews, and subscriptions in your podcast platform of choice make a huge difference. See you next time.